At $200, a Super Nintendo setup costs twice as much as the old system. For the money, the company promises better pictures, sound, and adventure. Now you're playing with power, superpower.
You're the king, I tell you! You're the king!
Only for Super NES.
You're listening to the SNES Podcast with your host, Soul Blazer.
Hello, folks. This is Super NES Podcast, episode number 230. I'm Greg, joined by always by Joe.
Hello.
And this episode, since we've covered some very heavy games as of recently, Joe and I decided to take, and also Joe and I have also been very busy recently in our personal lives. The combination of those reasons, we decided to take a more lighter game to cover in this episode. The first of several, not planned, but the first of several games with Super in the title. So, like you're in for a super stretch of the podcast coming up pretty soon here, it looks like. We're covering Super R-Type in this episode. So, I mean, Super Nintendo had a lot of games in the Super title anyways. So it's not really that hard to do this, but we don't usually have games lined up back-to-back-to-back like this. But, right. like the Accidental Movie Trilogy we did last year, I mean, this is going to be an Accidental Super Trilogy. So,
yep.
Shooters are good material to cover, like, for a lighter episode. So I was happy to play this. I've always been a big fan of shooters. Shooters are like my favorite genres. I'm a huge fan of the Gradius series. So, other games by the type. I had played this game when it first came out. Have not played it again for like many, many years. Joe, you didn't have any experience with this game, correct?
I did not have any experience with this game.
Have you had any experience with the R-Type games, at all?
I had the original one on the NES.
Oh, they did port that to NES, didn't they?
Yeah, I thought they did at least one of the R-Type games.
I don't see that one here being listed.
Maybe I played it on the Famicom emulating?
Maybe. The first game...
Or I'm confusing it with Gradius, which is possible.
Yeah, possibly, yeah, because the Game Boy definitely got ports of those games, but... the NES never got it. There's reasons why the game never came out in NES, which is similar to history of the game, which we'll get here like in a moment. But so R-Type is a series that has never been quite as popular as Gradius or some of the other shooter games out there. But the franchise definitely has had its like fans over the years. It's always a very like dedicated fan base like this day, because the first R-Type when it came out back in 1987 was a very groundbreaking game like in many ways. And the success of that first game definitely helped pave the way for other games like type to come. So R-Type is developed by IREM, a Japanese game company. They've done other games. But definitely, R-Type series is definitely the franchise that IREM's best known for. IREM also, if you're also like an old school arcade player like I am, you may also know IREM's company that's behind the very popular arcade games Moon Patrol and Kung Fu Master, which came out like in the early 80s. So this company is still around. But over the last 10 years or so, they have transitioned away from console games, to focus entirely upon the pachinko market. So, shades of what Konami's doing these days and whatnot.
Yay, pachinko!
But IREM itself is still around. They still license their properties to other companies. They still make collections. And re-release of their games among systems like this day. So, a brand new R-Type game done last year by a different company. But IREM is still active in the market, at least to some degree these days. So, The company is back in 1974, so they've sort of, they definitely have a long history. So, R-Type being very popular was ported to many systems, computers of the day. Because the game is so popular, R-Type was also available like in the arcades, which probably where people like played it at. Nintendo published the game outside of Japan, like the arcade markets, because IREM didn't really have much of an arcade presence of their presence by the late '80s. The game, of course, being so popular, did spawn a sequel, R-Type 2, which came out in 1989. And that game also got some ports. It was not possible to port the game straight to Super NES, however, because the game was so powerful and so complicated, and there was no way the console like a hand to it. At least at the time, this is early Super NES days, 1991. I'm sure later generations of carts could have handled the game like all right, but at the time period, the developers just felt they couldn't really get the game on the system. So what they did instead is they bastardized it. They took the first four stages from the starting stage of R-Type 2, added in three new ones, downgraded the game to be fit onto a cart, and released on the system Super R-Type. So, the game we got here on the console is kind of half R-Type 2, half new. So, they weren't the only company to do that certainly back in the day, but this is one of the more interesting examples. We would not see a full release of R-Type 2 here in the West, like to a collection of PlayStation like in the late 90s. So, there was, however, a sequel, R-Type 3, which did get ported to Super NES pretty much straight on 1993. We'll cover that game also at some point in the future. So, after that you had two of the R-Type games. Then there was a very long break before a new game came out. And then a new game came out to 2021. And then finally, as I mentioned before, a new game, R-Type Final 3 Evolved, came out last year for the PS5. So, even though IREM is not directly involved with two games, it is interesting to see that the R-Type games have had a recent revival as of late, which is why I said the franchise has never been super, super popular, but it was obviously popular enough, for them to make new games. So, and there are also some spin-offs that have been made, arcade games, mobile games, two interesting tactical role playing game spin-offs, which are actually getting a compilation release on modern systems later on this year in the West. That's interesting. I may have to check that. I never heard those games. I may have to check those out.
Interesting.
But R-Type 2 is available also with the first game in modern collections. The newest one that came out, it's called R-Type Dimensions, which came in 2018 for the Switch, PS4, and Steam. So if you want to play the original arcade game, you can get it that way. Super R-Type itself was available on the Wii Virtual Console, but has not been available since then. So I guess I figured because of the fact that the original arcade game is now available now, that there really wasn't like a need to. So in Japan and North America, IREM also published our Super R-Type. Nintendo picked up the publishing rights to release it in Europe. Came out in North America in September of 1991, about 10 weeks after its Japanese release, and came out in Europe the following year. So, given how this is an early Super NES game, this game is typical like of many other early Super NES games, in the sense that it's very flashy, it's very showy. They're obviously trying to show off the hardware a lot here by saying look how good these graphics are, look how good the music is, that kind of stuff. But the game's slow. It definitely is sluggish. It definitely has to slow down, that kind of stuff. So that's why I said if they'd waited several years, I'm sure they could have ported the original arcade game to the system with much better results. But not this is a bad port of the game. It's just like I said, you have to keep in mind the same limitations for this game. That Gradius 3 also suffered from the time period, like a whatnot. So, having said that, this is a typical shooter in many ways. You have your power-ups, it's side-scrolling, seven stages, as mentioned before, boss at the end. Thinking of the formula, a couple interesting things this game has. You have the choice of either doing normal shots or your shots, or you can also hold down the button like for a charge shot, which is very useful against bosses. Many bosses, if you know where and how to shoot, you can destroy them very, very easily with like one or two like charge shots. So charge shots definitely a very good weapon to use against bosses. So something else that's interesting in this game is like there are three difficulty levels you can pick from at the start of the game: easy, normal, hard. However, you have to beat the game in hard to unlock the final difficulty mode, which is so-called true difficulty mode, pro, and you have to beat the game on that setting to see the true ending of the game. So they're definitely encouraging playing the game a lot. So as a matter of fact, there's a YouTuber by the name Peg, who I really like. He does a lot of like shooting game playthroughs on YouTube, and he's a master of a player. He did a playthrough of Super Archetype a couple years ago where he did that. He did two all clear, no miss playthroughs of the game on both hard and pro, and before I comment on that, another thing this game does differently than many other games is that this game is very brutal, not because it's overly difficult. It's not that bad and uneasy. But for some reason, developers also decided to drive home the home release version of the game, and the fact that this game is very unique in that if you die, there's no checkpoint. It takes you all the way back to the start of the game. The start of the stage. So, and that is very, very harsh and very, very brutal. So, in his comments on the game when he plays it through on YouTube, Peg mentions that. Out of all the Super Nintendo shooters I've played, this one stands like above them all. It probably doesn't look that hard from the video. Once you play it, you figure out quite fast how ridiculous and rage-inducing that this game is. A single mistake on stage 6 or 7 loop 2 was pretty much game over, and 50 minutes lost. Now try to have that happen to you about 20 times before you clear the game. Now have your recording hardware software malfunction, and now your play gets lost. And then you have to play for another 20 hours before you clear. That's my life last month or so. So, mad respect to this guy for what he does. So if you want to see somebody play through this game and master degree, I definitely recommend looking at his videos on YouTube. So having said that, I agree with pretty much everything that he said. This game's brutal because of the fact that it tosses you all the way back to start the stage if you die. So I don't know exactly why they did that, just to make it difficult for more difficult for home release, I guess, but if it wasn't that one thing, I definitely would enjoy the game better than I did. So, since this was your first time playing the game, Joe, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
All right. So, pod placement is essential. That's the first thing I'm going to put out there. Whether you put it out in front of you, in the rear of the ship, or if you detach it so that it can just shoot lasers everywhere. Either way, your pod is and can be a lifesaver. In my experience, the pod was the one thing that extended my gameplay. I think I died and continued. Thank God for infinite continues. But I died and continued just on the first level, I think 10 to 15 times before I got to the end. Brutal. Absolutely brutal. On top of that, I did like, there's an auto fire button. So that is a welcome. Any shooter that I don't have to sit there and mash the button, I can just hold it down. That is a welcome feature. So thank you for that. There is 7 stages. Thankfully, there's a password system. So you don't have to, you know, play from level 1 when it's all said and done. You can kind of skip around. But the thing is that, like George had, Greg, sorry. Greg had mentioned.
he's the podcast of George, so I get it.
Right, right. there's no checkpoints. So you make it to the boss and you die. See you later. You won't be seeing that boss again, at least not for a few minutes. And I actually think this is a blessing and a curse. So, yes, it sucks that it sends you all the way back to the beginning. But also, because it sends you all the way back to the beginning, yes, you have to go through all that brutal difficulty that you already dealt with. But you can also regain all your power-ups. So this way, when you get back to the boss, you're not underpowered. You're still at the same power. You can learn from the mistake that you made. I'm just going to go into it now because it leads into my next point. This game, I think, personally, especially for an early Super Nintendo game, gorgeous. I think it looks fantastic. I love the variations on the levels, all that. That being said, these levels are so gorgeous and they have so much stuff coming at you that it will slow down the game to a crawl at some points.
It's bad.
Now, there's two ways to look at this. Either
a blessing and a curse, yep.
Right, right. So, one, it's a curse because it is infuriating to see it slow down like that. But if you could adapt to it, it is a blessing. There were times where I was avoiding ships so that more of them would get on stage. So this way it would cause the game to start stuttering and slow down so that I could start dodging bullets and being able to, you know, kill the enemies that were legit trying to kill me. So it ended up becoming a strategy in the game to, like, when should I allow enough enemy ships to build up to where there's a bit of slowdown to where I can take advantage of that. But yeah, the slowdown is really, like, the one thing I'm going to say about this game, like, is if there was no slowdown, this game would be great. And I think the difficulty still is up there and it sucks, you know, and no checkpoints is definitely brutal. But also, like, if you didn't have the slowdown, it wouldn't take as long to get back to the progress that you made.
Right. So the average playthrough of this game is about an hour, assuming that you don't die very often, or at all. Even speedrunners have not been able to prove that time very much. The speedrun the speedrun of this game is like 42 minutes. So, yeah. But yeah. So I definitely agree with everything that you just said. Slowdown for this game, maybe the worst slowdown in a Super NES game I played at this point. Not even Mario 3 had slowdown this bad, so
it's definitely the worst I've seen on the system so far. Yeah,
so I think most of the difficulty of this game is artificial nature. I mean that, you know, if the game didn't have slowdown, if the game allowed checkpoints, you know, then on easy, the game would be easy, as a matter of fact. Right. But because overall difficulty of this game, I think the overall difficulty of this game, I think, is on par or a bit easier than a Gradius game. But because the power system in this game is not as complicated as what Gradius uses, therefore it's not quite therefore it doesn't hurt you quite as bad if you die. That's the thing though, about the checkpoints. In Gradius, if you die, you often can be screwed because you don't have a chance to change the power ship back up again. At least in our type, if you go back to the beginning of the stage, you have a chance to make it back there with your power-ups intact this time. So, like many of the things we were saying before, it's a blessing and a curse. But if you play this game, if you want to play this game nowadays, I definitely recommend emulation, like you can use save states. Many fans of the franchise, like I said, do not play this game anymore these days. It's definitely not as popular as it used to be because of the fact that because of all these problems that we talked about, and because the arcade game is available now in the modern collection. So, like I said at the beginning, this game is just a bastardization of like half an arcade game, like a half brand new material. So,
yeah.
Having said all that, Joe, I definitely agree with you that the slowdown does give you a chance to be able to survive situations that normally you wouldn't be able to. So in some ways, this actually may be a good game for a beginner to check out because, you know, you will be able to get used to the mechanics of how a shooting game operates. Right. On those things, those elements before you go off to a more difficult game. So, conversely, like I said, this game is so interesting in many ways because it's a contrast in so many ways. It's like good on one hand, bad on the other. In so many aspects across the whole game. It's a very interesting case study.
Yeah, for sure.
But overall, how'd you enjoy your time with the game, though?
I mean, once I figured out how to deal and manipulate the slowness and whatnot in the game, I thought overall it's a pretty good game. I did kind of jump ahead and play R-Type 3 just because I was curious as to whether or not that one was just as bad as this one.
No, it's better.
I was going to say, I'm happy to report that is not the case. And
yes,
when we cover that game, I will go into detail. But I was pleasantly surprised by what they were able to do a couple years later. And I agree with you. Like, maybe they should have just kind of held off and not made this port, you know, and just waited a few years. But also, like, maybe this was the programming, you know, trial they had to go through to get to what we got with R-Type 3. Sure. So,
you know, like I said before, this game's typical of many early Super NES releases. So, you know, I'm not going to... Obviously, the releases of games... Obviously, early releases for system are not as polished as later games are.
Right.
We know that. So, by the standards of the time, this is a very good game. Nowadays, because of the problems we just talked about, this game's fallen out of favor with like many people, and it's not people as the ratings we'll cover when we get to those later on.
Yeah.
But the time period, this was a very good game. So, I remember this game being talked about quite a lot when it came out because even though it was known the game wasn't straightforward an arcade game. However, it was the first R-Type game available on a console. Before, if you want to play an R-Type game, you had a computer, you know, like an Amiga, an Atari, or something like that. So, for people wanting to play this game at home, this was the first experience for them. So,
yeah.
But I agree with you. For an early game, the graphics are very good. They definitely push the graphics very hard. They definitely advertise the graphics very heavily with this game. And by early Super NES standards, like, it's very good. Music, I think, is a mixed bag. Shooters, I think, need to have a very good soundtrack. It really helps the overall ambience for the game. The greatest games, for example, they have a great soundtracks. The music of this game is good, I think. I think the music from stage one is the best song in the game, bar none. Yep. But, the later stages, they're not bad music. It's just very more average sounding. While it works and fits the theme of the game, it's nowhere near as memorable as say, the Gradio series.
So, my exact note is the music is pretty good. That bass slaps hard.
Yes, it does.
overall, the music, especially as it gets later in the game, it reminded me of hotel elevator music, like in like an upscale hotel.
Because
it's that jazz kind of sound that they're going
sure,
for.
Right, yeah.
And it works. It does. But it's just not something I expected more of an up-tempo and like more excited score, and that's not what we got as we got later on. Like, if everything was like stage one moving forward, fantastic soundtrack, would have been great. I could have dealt with everything this game threw at me, but like not having that good music soundtrack to go with it, in my opinion, is also another strike on this game for me not to continue playing it or to go back to it at any point.
So I'll mention this here because it kind of fits in. One of the codes this game offers, and this is pretty unique for a console game to offer, I think, is it's possible to be able to hear remixes of the music in this game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Then you go into the background test on the game, pick a track, and then push the R button. Push the R button to make the music fade out. While it's fading, keep pushing the R button repeatedly, and you hear musical tones played over and over again. And then eventually, you hear like a remix version of, like, that song, like, start playing.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, it is. I was very surprised to read that, check it out to make sure it worked, and it did. Like I said, I've never heard of a game doing this before. So
yeah, that's interesting.
But Super Archetype, I think, was a very good game for its type, time. Like I said before, early Super NES games, they're really trying to tell us that they really trying to sell the system. Good graphics, good music, that kind of stuff. Playable today depends upon your standards. You know, like I said before, if you're a newbie player, this is actually maybe a good one to start with because the throwdown kind of helps you out. Obviously, like an R-type fan, you want to play this. Otherwise, general fans of shooters in general, I honestly just recommend bypassing this and just playing the arcade version instead. You know, especially if the arcade version is available, like it's available to come on systems.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, like I said, it's not a bad game, but just definitely product of its time, where it's like, I think, like, you know, things have changed considerably in 30 years plus since the game came out. But we also should mention the power-ups of it. The power-ups available in the game, like, real quick. Flavio's most curious if he had a favorite, Joe. You can pick up during the course of the game a shotgun bomb, a sky laser, a ground laser, a reflect laser, a spread laser, a homing missile like a thunder bomb. The spread laser is pretty good, I think. Against certain bosses, the sky laser and the shotgun bombs are definitely very good.
Yeah, and those would be my nominees as well. But I'm a sucker for homing missiles, so.
Yep. Homing missiles, nice too. Know, yep.
Absolutely love homing missiles.
So that's pretty much about it as far as the game goes. I mean, like I said before, it's a very interesting project. You know, like, not many games did this kind of thing. There were others, but you know, but Super Archetype is definitely kind of unique in this sense. So, a good product of its time. But like I said before, just this game's interesting in the sense that everything here kind of says, like, you know, like, well, it's good in this sense and bad in the other. So,
right.
It's been a long time since we've covered a game. I think they had so many. Well, it does this and it also does this things as this game does for sure. But anything else you want to say about the game before we move on, Joe?
No, I mean just echo your sentiment. You should at least check it out. And you know, if you're a veteran, you probably aren't going to revisit this for the same reasons that we said. But, newbies, I think, should check this out. At least it's a good introduction to R-Type, and that slowdown can help you out and get you to learn a couple strategies to carry on into future games.
Right, yep. So the game, like the game as I mentioned before, got mixed reviews when it came out, and like the mixed reviews pretty much carried over, like the present. The reviewers mentioned the same highlights and cons of the game that we already talked about. The aggregate score on game rankings as of right now is 61%. So, Entertainment Weekly, for example, gave it a score like the 70s. They did mention, however, that they thought that the graphics of the game looked like illustrations taken from like pulp science fiction magazines and comics of the 1930s, which I didn't think about before. But yeah, I see. I can too. So, Joypad, a French magazine gave a score of 87%. Super Gamer gave a score like like 74%. So, yeah, very mixed ratings, like, the game. Again, the highs are pretty high, the lows are pretty low. So, yeah. Your overall enjoyment of the game would depend upon what you're looking for, I think, like, I mean, to this. So, anyway, the game did sell well when it came out, so let's cover those the codes. I already mentioned the hidden difficulty and also the music remix features this game has. There is a way to be able to there is a stage select code in the game that you can use, and there's also weapon select code that you can use. So you can use those things to, you know, jump ahead to stages that you want to play, to practice on, or just get the weapons that you want to get. The game sold pretty well at the time, so it's, like, pretty easy to find. Prices are also pretty cheap, reflecting, by Super NES standards, reflecting the fact this game's not as popular as it used to be. I found the time doing research, for this podcast, 220 copies of the game were listed on eBay, 129 copies of the game I recently sold. These prices include shipping. Cards only, they sold anywhere from $8 to $27. So pretty cheap by Super NES standards. CIB also was also, like, pretty cheap, anywhere from $29 to $32. So a very tight price range for this game, which you usually don't see in Super NES games, and also, like, pretty cheap as far as Super NES games go.
Yeah, it's not bad at all.
So, anyway, so that's Super R-Type. A very interesting shooter, like the time period. So, and also, like, reflective, upon the franchise. I actually missed the fact that two new R-Type games came out in recent years. I may have to check that out because, you know, I always did enjoy the R-Type games. I prefer the Gradius games more, but the R-Type games, I think, are also, like, pretty good, like, their own respect. So now I know the releases and also two new games. I'll check them out to see how they are.
Yeah, I might have to look into that myself.
There's still a pretty active shooter market out there. I mean, like, you know, there are still core game players out there. I know that the 360, for example, the Xbox 360 saw a lot of shooters released for it.
Yeah.
The catch is many of those shooters are like Japan only, because shooting market is more popular in Japan.
Right.
However, being a shooter, it's not very prominent. The prominent point of them because Japanese games, it doesn't even very light. We didn't mention the story this game has. There is a story, but because because it's a shooter, you know, it's a shooter. People don't pay attention to it. It's typical, like, one-man ship fighting against, like, an invading Armada empire kind of, like, thing.
Yeah.
So,
my note, I put, the story is you jump in your R9 and you take on the Baido Empire. Good luck.
Yeah. Pretty much it, so. I should not be surprised the PS5 has, has shooters on it, so. Because, like I said, the shooter market is still a thing. It's just not as popular now as it used to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's Super R-Type for you. As always, we appreciate you listening to the podcast. Give us a few minutes of your day. If you have any feedback, questions, suggestions, feel free to leave us a comment on the Facebook group, or you can also send me an email directly to thesnespodcast@yahoo.com. Joe, where can they reach you at?
You can find me on Twitter at JoeSUX30. I have a very public Facebook. I also do the Radical Retro Roundup, which you can check that out, but it's not family friendly, so keep that in mind. Don't play it in the office.
Right.
we're about to record an episode on covering 30 years of the Blue Album by Weezer, so that's going to be fun.
Okay, all right.
That's kind of a side spin-off to the Radical Retro Roundup, but I haven't thought of, like, its own little thing yet, so it's just still part of the Radical Retro Roundup. And then we're doing our typical doing a game thing, and we're doing SmackDown Just Bring It, which is technically the third game in the franchise, so...
Was that a 360 game?
No, that's a PS2 game.
PS2 game. Okay, so even earlier than that. Okay, all right. Yeah. So,
yep.
I thought maybe I'd play that one, but I don't think so. I don't think I play anything on the PS2 as far as that goes.
Yeah, spoiler, we record in a week and a half, and I have not played that game yet, so.
Well, I mean, wrestling games of that type are not, the wrestling games of that age are not very deep, so.
Yeah. And then, okay. You know, it's literally the first game that transitioned from the original PlayStation to the PS2, so there isn't too much new. So, yeah, it's not, you know, something I need to get heavily into, but yeah, it's right. George was like, I want to cover it. And I was like, okay.
You had played it before?
I had not. So,
oh, okay. All right.
I played all the other games. So that's why I'm saying, like, I get the general idea of what the game is, you know, because pretty much they didn't change the formula for up to 10 years. Pretty much up until like 2007 is where they kind of really deviated from like the
formula. I've also heard a lot of fans say that in their own opinion that they thought the N64, that generation, had the best wrestling games.
It depends on what you're looking for.
True. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
So like, yeah, the Aki engine is probably one of the best engines created for sure. And it's more of a methodical and like you have to wear your opponent down kind of thing, and it's more simulation in that sense, whereas the SmackDown games were very much arcade style. There was no like there was no realism there, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So
and that's how those differed, and you know, some people like their simulation and some people don't. So
right. Yeah. Totally fair. So, coming up next to the podcast is another, like, super game that I already, like, teased about. We're going to be covering Super Adventure Island, which is another, like, you know, Super NES version of a very popular franchise coming out the first time, I think, on the system. I think Super Adventure Island was the first Super NES game.
Just a correction. Super Adventure Island 2.
Oh, okay. All
right. This is the sequel. So, yes, it had come out before. This is the sequel to that. And this is one of those, like, you know, I grew up with Adventure Island on the NES, so
okay, yeah.
You know, the fact that it's out on the Super Nintendo, and I've only played the first one, Super Adventure Island, so this one's going to be a mystery for me. But you know, you typically know what you're getting with Master Higgins, so we'll see.
True. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I also have not played that game because I played the NES games a lot, but I thought, but even though I enjoyed them, I thought they were also like stupidly difficult. So it's like, like Super NES, I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to move on. So
yeah, yep, I hear you.
But I'm also curious to see how it plays. But that'll be next time. Thank you again very much for staying with us. Thank you for indulging us like the delay to get this episode out a week later than usual. You know, as you probably may know about, if you look at things at all, like on Facebook, Joe recently got married, so congratulations.
Yep,
so,
thank you.
The week delay was because of that. So any complaints, send his way.
Yep. But anyway, I monitor the Facebook, so, you know, if you have anything, just post something there.
But we should be, barring anything else happening, we should be on track for 2 weeks, going forward, like the foreseeable future. So,
yeah.
So as always, thanks again for everybody listening. Thanks again, Joe.
Absolutely.
See you again all next time, and take care, everybody.
Bye.
Nintendo controls 80% of the video market. But no matter how you play the game, or which game you play, things definitely have come a long way since Pac-Man.
Now you're playing with power. Deep Pong Power.